Welcome to Let's Get To, the baseball podcast from the fan's perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And that's right, we are back with Let's Get To, and we've got a show that's all about the great city of Chicago. We're going to be visiting with the Chicago Dogs. We've done a site visit out to Impact Field in Rosemont, Illinois. And then we've got a really cool interview with the Chicago Dogs co-owner, Sean Hunter. That, Andy Tom Cheston's down here to break down the Astros, some really fun promos from the Eastern League. But it can't help but be noted that we are like 2 weeks away from my favorite non-athletic day on the sports calendar, and that is Major League Baseball's trade deadline. The only day that comes close for me when you start thinking about a sports day in which sports aren't played is college football signing day. I love me some trade deadline. I love all the rumors. I love the intrigue. I'm into it. And if you think back to a few episodes when we talked to the folks from the Erie Seawolves, the trade deadline really has a big effect on minor league baseball as well, not just the major league team, because generally speaking, you get teams that are, quote, buyers, i.e. teams that have a shot at the playoffs, think they're going to make the World Series, trying to kind of strengthen up the roster. And they will trade with teams that are sellers, and generally speaking, they're trading major league ready or near major league ready prospects. So it's kind of an interesting thing that doesn't happen in sports or a lot of other sports with the veracity you see in baseball, where trades are happening all the time. I mean, and they've already started, and it will get nuts. Should be fun to watch this year. With there only being one trade deadline, normally there's two. The trade deadline, which at the end of July, and then the non-waiver trade deadline at the end of August. And they've kind of simplified that and just having one in July. So it should be very, very interesting to watch. But I do want to say a direct message to my friend, the sports talk show caller. Now listen, if you're going to waste time and you're going to call folks like Matt Thomas in Houston or, you know, Aaron Hogan in Austin, saying you want to trade X guy for X guy, you can't have the basis be that you want to trade him because he's on your team and you think he sucks. Because if he's on your team and you want him gone because you think he sucks, why would anyone want to trade for him? It doesn't make any sense. People, generally speaking, try to make sure that both parties get something out of the trade because their goals are so different. You know, in Astros fandom, the big talk is about whether Kyle Tucker or Forrest Whitley will get traded. And I heard a guy on the aforementioned Matt Thomas show today call in talking about how Kyle Tucker is awful. He'll never be anything. We need to get rid of him. So let's trade him for like Scherzer. The asinine level is at an all-time high with that, because if he's awful and he'll never be anything, why would the Nationals want to trade Scherzer for him? Or anybody? Generally speaking, A, people have been asking about Kyle Tucker for 2 years and the Astros won't trade him because there's clearly talent and ability there. And if you don't believe the Astros GM saying it, then believe all the other GMs who want him. And I'm not saying they shouldn't trade Kyle Tucker. I think that there is a situation where Kyle Tucker being traded makes a lot of sense. You just can't have, if you're going to waste people's time on these call-in shows, you just can't have the basis for you wanting him traded that he's just not good. It doesn't make any sense. And so you're basically cluttering up the airwaves and wasting everyone's time. I should do an examination of the psychology of the person who regularly calls into sports talk shows. I think I might be it might find something very interesting and scary wrapped in all of that. But, you know, we're not going to do a lot of hot takes. We'll talk about the trade deadline probably two more times, one right before it happens, and then we'll have our Major League guy and our Astros guy on to talk about, like, sort of the repercussions and where they think it's going. But this isn't a Major League Baseball show, and we were real excited to go and visit with the Chicago Dogs. Now, the Chicago Dogs play in the American Association of Independent Professional Baseball, and they're the second team that we've covered. A couple weeks ago, we spoke to the Cleburne Railroaders, also a member of the American Association of Indie Professional Baseball. And if just think about that for a second, a team outside of Dallas and a team in Chicago, both independent leagues, and that's a big area of geography to play. It's taxing on an independent team. Part of why we want folks to know about them, because they really are out doing it for the love of the game. So we do want to start out by thanking Dana Calkins and Alex Jakubiak from Carol Fox and Associates for showing us around, making us feel welcome. We also want to thank the owner of the Chicago Dogs for really giving us the first class experience with access to the VIP area, really, really great seats about two rows behind home plate. It was a really, really great experience. I had a blast. I do want to apologize to the city of Chicago for something I brought with me, and that was 95 degree heat and unbelievable humidity. I honestly felt the same during that game as I felt during the Durham Bulls game a week ago. It was hot, sweaty, and gross, but a blast. So I flew into Chicago early that morning, and I got to say, first of all, I love Chicago. I've not been there enough for my liking. I think it's a great town. There's so much to do. Great, all in all, great city. But this was a baseball trip, and so I landed pretty early, about 10 in the morning, and I had about 5 or 6 hours to kill before it was time for me to get out to the ballpark. And it being a baseball trip, I first wanted to go check out where the Chicago White Sox play. And very beautiful stadium. I will say that I didn't appreciate being reminded of the 2005 World Series. I thought that was a little mean. Maybe be nicer next time. But beautiful park. And then I was going to go, but I wasn't able to get in. Obviously, it was All-Star break, and there was nothing really going on. But I really wanted to also check out Wrigley. And so I pulled into Wrigley, and they were having a tour. And I paid $25 and jumped in the tour line. Now, I'd been to Wrigley before for a ball game, and we'll be honest, have talked openly about how unimpressed I am with Wrigley Field. I feel like, you know, I can't, first of all, it was over 10 years ago, and I felt like every view was obstructed view, and I didn't really feel the need to go back. The tour absolutely changed all of that. I thought it was, really gave me a lot of insight to both the history of the game, you know, taking the tour, going into the visiting clubhouse and realizing that that was the same clubhouse that like Babe Ruth got dressed in. And it really did hit you in the feels when you talk about just how old that park is and how important it is to the history of baseball. But the mission was to go and really talk about the Chicago Dogs. First of all, the park is great. And it, those of you who follow Ballpark Digest on Twitter, and you should, would know that Chicago Dogs, that Impact Field in Rosemont, actually won their award for best independent stadium. And it really was something to behold. We've got a video of our trip that I'll put in the description of the podcast, but it was something, again, they did a lot of things I'd not seen before or not seen very often. And everything was designed from every single square inch of that ballpark to the fan experience. And somebody asked me on the Facebook page, like, well, how do you find these things? And, you know, some teams I find because filmmakers that come to our festival recommend them to me. Or some of the teams I find because I hear about them from a cousin, or they're connected to the Astros, or they're in the Texas League or whatever. The Chicago Dogs, I absolutely found by mistake. My stepfather-in-law is from Chicago. I was looking for something cool to get him for his birthday and stumbled on the logo. And end up getting him a t-shirt. But that logo really grabbed me. And, you know, they say you can't judge a book by its cover, but the logo just really, really connected with me. And it's one of the best logos in baseball, I'm convinced. I love the tie-in of three elements. Of the Chicago flag, the tie-in of the baseball, and the tie-in of the hot dog imagery. And all of that blends together using the colors of the Chicago flag into, again, a logo that I just adore, and I have the credit card receipt from the gift shop to prove it. Now, when we're talking about the game experience at a park like this, it always comes down to proximity, sight lines, and seating. And even for a minor league stadium, they did a great job of not building it up too high, that everything is built at a certain level, and they instead went for having actual seating farther down the foul poles as opposed to just sort of to the dugout and then having berms and walk around space. They have all kinds, they have picnic areas, they have traditional seats. They've got bars where you can stand in the outfield and watch, not bar bars, but like just ledges. And then there's plenty to offer if you want to go up high and sit at a party deck. There are sofas. There is one air conditioned section that you can get in and you get like you for a low rate, you get access to that plus the ledge seating that they have and then food and alcohol. But there's something for every price point. And you're able to have all different kinds of viewing experiences from this park. There's something about being up high, overlooking a stadium at night on a soft couch, hanging out with a beer, watching the game. It's really, really incredible. And one of the best ways to spend an evening. It's funny because we've talked on this show about some of the minor league teams that we've covered that have a problem connecting all levels of their identity. You know, I hate to talk bad about the Gwinnett Stripers, but, you know, their mascot is the Stripers, but yet they've got, I can't even remember what as their, but it's not a fish, right? Like there's a disconnect there. One of the things that's super cool is the way that Chicago takes that whole hot dog mentality and wraps it all into all of their branding. And I'm talking about Squeeze, their mascot, who is a bottle of mustard. Super friendly. He's out. He was, you know, we went on Bark in the Park Day, so he's feeding the dogs. It was all just very, very cool and tied together. But there's an enemy mascot, and it's Ketchup. And, you know, again, just taking all of that and thinking through every single little detail is really just one of the ways that they've top to bottom designed this entire Chicago dog experience to be super fan friendly. And the game itself, I mean, it was competitive. The dogs won, and we got to do a doubleheader, which was super cool. And if you're in Chicago, you gotta see two. You gotta do the old Ernie Banks thing. So that was the big draw for me, is I'd not been to too many doubleheaders in my life because my team of choice plays in a covered stadium. So cool to be out there. And the first game was really, really competitive. The dogs had to fight back. They gave up like 4 runs in the first inning and then fought back and won it in a walk-off. And then 30 minutes later, they adopted a different identity, the Chicago Wieners, and really took it to the folks from Gary and won pretty easily. But one of the things that you see that's different in indie ball, if you want to draw a dividing line between independent ball and minor league baseball, and that is the fan interaction. The players were talking to fans from the on-deck circle, and there was like a rivalry going where there was a couple of inebriated Chicago Dogs fans yelling at inebriated Gary fans, yelling at each other's players. I made eye contact with the catcher from the Gary team, the Railcats, and we kind of laughed at one of the things this super intoxicated guy had said. So it was fun to have that veil of I'm an athlete and this is my time of work kind of dropped a little bit and see those players interact. So it was a great time. You know, one of the ways, the biggest compliment I can give, and it isn't given to every single team that we visit, is that I will be back. I do want to take Jessica and go out there and see another game for the Chicago Dogs. It was that good a time. And again, I just can't thank Sean and Dana and Alex enough for opening the doors, opening their team to our show, and giving us an opportunity to do all kinds of fun stuff. And I highly recommend watching the video because it's a great time.
From the bleachers, the Let's Get To Game of the Week.
So we did have a From the Bleachers segment. My wonderful cousin, Bridget, came from Chicago to Rosemont to check out the dogs. Unfortunately, we had a little bit of wind on the microphone. I wasn't counting on it being so windy in Chicago. They should really warn people, I don't know, maybe put it in a name or, you know, at least like a nickname, you know, Houston's the space city, maybe something to warn about the elements with the wind. But we got a little bit of our conversation about her getting to watch the Chicago Cubs win the World Series and some fun play-by-play. So we got some excerpts. Hope you enjoy it. And we are here on Let's Get To, and we are coming at you live from the bleachers. And we're not just from the bleachers. We are about 15 feet from home plate in Impact Field in wonderful, just outside of Chicago, Illinois. And I'm here with my favorite cousin, Bridget. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, Cousin Jimmy.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
So is this your first Chicago Dogs experience?
It is.
And have you thought, like, what do you think about it? So, like, do you do a lot of minor league anyway? I mean, I know that you are a Cubs fan, and we're going to talk about that.
No, I do not do a lot of minor league things. So thank you for inviting me out to lovely Rosemont, Illinois.
Yeah.
I took the blue line to a shuttle bus that got me here safe.
Got you here safe a little.
Eventually.
A little tardy. Luckily, it was a doubleheader.
Yes.
So we got to experience a grand total of 9 innings of baseball by the time it's all over.
Yes.
Try to describe to them how close we are right now.
Well, the guy warming up, I feel like I should actually talk lower because I may be distracting him from his warm-up right here. 20 feet
right,
from the plate.
20 feet from
30
the plate.
Feet.
Because you are or were a long-suffering Cubs fan. As many Cubs fans. And you came by it honestly. You weren't one of these Cubs fans who rolled out of bed and was like, hey, it's game 7 of the World Series, and I sort of marginally like the Cubs. Ooh. Did he catch it?
Nope.
And it's off the wall. We're going to get a stand-up double. We got a run coming. We got a play to the plate. And he's going to be safe at home. I don't know if I'm legally allowed to do play-by-play, but I just did. So the 8 people listening to this podcast can't give us play. But what was it like to finally get the World Series?
Oh, my gosh. It was crazy. I actually had luckily taken the day after off, Game 7, just because I was exhausted from being out so many nights watching games that went late and just the stress and whatever. Yeah. And thank God I did, because after we won, it was just mayhem. I live about a quarter mile north of Wrigley Field, and when I finally got back to my place at night, there was just nonstop, like, people parked outside honking and jumping on top of their cars, like, playing music. Like, the energy at 3 a.m. was just...
Yeah.
Like, ridiculous. And the bar we watched at was a bar that, you know, we used to go to quite a bit at the time. And a lot of regulars were there. And people were just, like, to be honest, I don't have the lineage of Cubs fans in my family. But certainly have become a Cubs fan the last 20 years. And people were crying. And, like, my grandfather would have loved this. And my dead grandmother. Yeah. Like, people were so, like, overwhelmed with the win. Just the emotion involved in it was just really cool to experience.
So I need Matt Robertson. So Matt's father, Ken, is a big fan of our show. And he does a little bit of a drinking game every time I mention the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. So Matt needs to just sort of check it out. But that was kind of how I felt about our grandfather when the Astros won in 17. Like, he would have loved that. And I think that's kind of what makes baseball so cool. But yeah, so go back to, again, beating the Indians, Game 7. And they had to come back to win, right? Like,
we had the rain delay. Like, you know, so many games were out late, and finally I'm like, I just need to take the next day off because I'm just exhausted. Like, I'm a 9-to-5-er. Like, I can't do the 1 a.m. at a bar.
Yeah.
Being stressful about a game, you know.
Because we're adults now.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would be out watching with friends. It was super fun. But then I'm like, I need to take the next day off. Thank God I did, seriously. But the next day, walking down to Wrigley Field, people were taking pictures next to the World Series marquee. And, that was so fun.
So now that... it's been won. And so what is your sense? Like, so is there the sense that, okay, so we won once, mm-hmm. and that's enough? Or, like, are they mad? Like, because the Cubs have underperformed the last 2 years.
Yes.
Are people, that's a drive to right field. Back, and that is going to be caught at the warning track. He made a bid, but came up just short. That's pretty good, right?
That's really good. I was like, you turned the radio on.
Yeah. Thank you so much, first of all, for coming out tonight and hanging out. Like, I've had a great time at this park. It's been awesome.
Yes, it's been a good time. Thanks for inviting me out.
To the first 10,000 fans, the Let's Get To promotion of the week.
Now, a little later on, we're going to be talking about the folks from the Eastern League, and that's where we're going to focus our promotional segment, because they've, you know, as a league, they got a lot of fun stuff coming up this weekend, so we're going to go through a couple of the teams. Now, the Reading Fighting Phils, on Thursday night, this coming Thursday, they are going to have Throwback Jersey Night, and on the following Saturday, they are going to have a mascot band. And I'll try to remember to link one of these videos, but I recommend Googling Reading Fighting Phils and mascot band, because they are awesome. Now, the Harrisburg Senators, after the game this weekend, they are going to have a human cannonball. That's right. On the baseball field, they are going to shoot someone out of a freaking cannon. So check it out. Go to the Harrisburg Center's website to check that out. On July 18th, the Bowie Bay Sox will have improv, so the free-range comedy of Annapolis will make you laugh all night long with their hilarious improvisational comedy throughout the game. The comedy will be ages appropriate. And first of all, I mean, this is like, again, minor league baseball taking that next step of being complete, a complete entertainment experience with no dead time. And the idea of just bringing out improv comics to work through the entire game, that's pretty next level. Now, on July 20th, the Richmond Flying Squirrels are going to be having what they call their in-your-face fireworks, which is where they launch the fireworks a lot closer. And they're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the lunar landing. So 50 years ago, allegedly, just kidding, I'm not one of those flat earthers. We landed on the moon, y'all. Get over it. But 50 years ago, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, historic first steps on the moon with an out-of-this-world fireworks show from up close and personal from inside the fence. Now, one of the things I would like to shout out to Matt, the baseball traveler's son, the first word said on the moon was Houston. That's right, Houston. The Astros will be doing a big thing for the lunar landing too. I'll be there. So I kind of love that a lot of teams have found this really relatively obscure and sadly now debated point of American history to celebrate it, because it's funny because I'm not a big space guy, and that frustrates my wife. Like, she's really into like astronomy, and you know, we've gone to Big Ben and done stuff, and I don't really care, but I care that we care as a culture. And so I love that when NASA needs to be getting money, we need to be doing a lot more of that stuff. The Flying Squirrels will wear astronaut-themed spacesuits complete with a lunar landing night mission patch, and the proceeds of the astronaut jersey auction benefit STEM education programs at the Math Science Innovation Center. So they're using that money for jerseys to go back into science and technology education. Can't beat it. Now listen, the last one we'll talk about is on July 18th, the Akron Rubber Ducks, by far one of my favorite brands in baseball, period, are going to be having Pat Benatar fireworks presented by Kenmore Construction. I love me some Pat Benatar. I love me some 80s. And they're going to follow it up with the next night with Eddie Money fireworks. Tickets to paradise, indeed.
Go, go, Astros. A focus on H-Town hardball.
And we are back on Go, Go, Astros with our Go, Go, Astros extraordinaire, Andy Tomchesson. Andy, how's it going?
Good. How are you this morning, James?
I'm good. So, what a way to leave that dump in Arlington by burning it down with an 8-run victory. Pretty sweet, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't looking great about midway through Saturday night's game. So I'm glad to come out with a split. I'm glad that we laid in a 7th spot in the 7th inning on the Rangers. And hopefully, I don't consider the Rangers a rivalry, but I guess games like this will continue to make me move back in that direction or move towards that direction, because there's nothing sweeter than having a bunch of the Arlington fans just be shut up until at least next week.
And I think next week they've not played well away from home, and the Astros, weirdly enough, if you look at their record for the last 3 years, have played really well at home. But not everything is peachy king in the blue and orange country. In April, if I would have said the impact to Peacock would be a bigger deal than the injury to Peacock would be a bigger deal than the injury to Correa, would you have thought I was crazy?
Yes, probably. But we always knew going in that starting pitching, if we were healthy, we'd be fine. If we performed, we'd be fine. I guess every team's like that. But we didn't have a whole lot of room for error. And that's been compounded over the last several months this season with the failure of Forrest Whitley to continue to develop, the injury to Corbin Martin. He's out for at least the 18 months. And then the injuries we've had at the major league level. When we broke camp, we were expecting Colin McHugh to be a serviceable number three or four starter. He got hurt. We were expecting.
Let's back up for a second, because I was at his last two starts. Those 10 runs he gave up weren't just because of an injury. He was bad.
Agreed, but they were still counting on him. So when you have Verlander Cole as your 1-2, and Miley has been very, very good for what we've paid for him, he's a guy that's going to go six and give up three. If that's in the first inning, if that's in the fifth inning, it doesn't really matter. It tends to work out that that's what he's going to do. His strikeout numbers are up, which is interesting. But beyond those three, it has been a revolving door of injuries and AAA call-ups and a AA call-up last couple of weeks, who just haven't performed, who have not only not performed, but in a couple of cases, like Framber Valdez, have regressed over the course of the season to the point that you're basically guaranteeing a four spot before the Astros get to bat in a home game. That's a tough position. And you saw it play out a lot during the losing streak a few weeks ago, where before you even came to bat or before you got to your second at bat in the game, you're facing a four or five run hole. And that's tough to come out of day after day after day.
So let me ask you this, because you know, you and I talk about this stuff a lot, and everybody on the planet knows that we're within about 2 weeks of the trade deadline. How does this all affect the Astros? Because now, you know, the Astros, everybody knows what they need, and some of the potential trade chips that got called up didn't necessarily perform that might have actually hurt their trade value. What kind of position does that put the team in, do you think?
I think it doesn't put them in a great position, and I think there's a few things at play. You've got to not only find a starter, because the Astros are building for the long term and to continue to be a long-term team. They want to be a team that is in the playoff conversation or in the playoffs really every year. But this season is really World Series or bust, at least from my perspective. I don't think they're going to sacrifice their entire future, but I think it's an issue where they're expected to win. Anything less than making the World Series is going to be viewed as a disappointment by most of the fans and probably the organization. So that gets you into, well, what can we afford to give up, and what do we have that's valuable to another team in exchange for a player who's going to make a difference? And I think the Astros are in a really tough spot because they don't have the trade chips that they thought they might have coming out of this year. And so that opens up deeper into the minor leagues. Do you deal somebody like a Seth Beer who's having success in his minor league run? Do you start considering Kyle Tucker not untouchable? Do you hope somebody's willing to take a flyer on somebody like Corbin Martin, but you're giving up on that potential? It's a tough situation, and I don't blame Jeff Lunau for a lot of things. I think he's done a masterful job, and obviously it resulted in two division titles and a World Series. But I think his biggest misstep so far, maybe 1A and 1B with J.D. Martinez, is letting Charlie Morton go for nothing. Because you're talking about somebody who's potentially going to win the Cy Young in the American League this year, has a super shot, and he's doing it for a team that isn't as good as Houston is. He would look fantastic in a number three, and we'd be having much different conversations were he still pitching for Houston.
Yeah, and I know that there's been a lot of stories about Charlie, and there have been some that said he wasn't offered enough. There were some stories that I read that he was going to stay in Florida because that's where he wanted to go, and he might have even retired. So, but yeah, it's hard to not look at those numbers and look at how much he would have still fit. Obviously, the clubhouse loves him. I don't mind giving up Dallas. I think when you get Wade Miley, you basically have Dallas Keuchel, but maybe more consistent.
And with less attitude.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not look at Wade Miley and think, I think I could like that dude, where I don't know that a lot of people would like Dallas Keuchel. But let's say, you know, you're in the GM, you get to be GM for a day. What does make, in your opinion, Forrest Whitley or Kyle Tucker tradable at this point?
For me, and I don't have a name really attached to this, I think we've talked about the players that we'd like to see or that are potentially targets, and I think they're the same for everybody. There's no magic pitcher out there that nobody's thinking about right now. But I think you have to have a starting pitcher who has proven major league performance, who throws at a high spin rate because that matters to us, and that is controllable for at least 1 year past this season, if not more. And so that limits your scope a lot. The other issue is the Astros are running into this competitive balance tax that next year they're only going to have $14 million to re-sign, I think, seven players off the current roster if they choose to do so. And going back to your original question about how much does it hurt you that your minor league players haven't performed to expectations, well, our system, Lunau's system, only works if you have cheap performing players on your roster to fill in the gaps with your superstars. So you're going to have an Altuve, you're going to have a Springer, you're going to have an all-star outfield and infield, but you've got to fill your bench with players that are making league minimum or not too far above it. And you now are running into a situation where that's not going to be possible, or at least it doesn't look great. And so when you go out and try to find somebody, I mean, it almost means Gerrit Cole is gone for sure. And I think we all kind of expected that.
Yeah, especially with how his season has gone, he is going to be able to demand
$30 million plus a year.
Yeah.
And unless Jim Crane is willing to pay that tax, there's just not much of a chance we're going to see him again in an Astros uniform. And so you've got to find the person who's going to step up and take his place. And I think the organization was hoping that would be Whitley. Right now that's not something they can count on. Can't count on it being Corbin Martin. You can't count on it being J.B. Bukakis. So you've got to find pitching from somewhere. And right now your suspects, Framber Valdez, Josh James, Brad Peacock, are all varying strata of injury or inconsistency. And it's a concern, maybe not for this year, but certainly going into next year. So this year, how you answer next year is finding a starting pitcher who is controllable and who has tools that Brent Strom and AJ Hinch can work with. And so that's a long way to answer what would make Whitley available for me is that Noah Syndergaard, DeGrom, the guys like that that have years that they have to give us and have proven performance and throw it at a high spin rate.
And Scherzer just hit the DL. I don't know if you saw that with the back injury, I think. And I think that actually I had my wildest dreams of trying to make a run at him, but I think that's probably all but done. Plus the Nationals got hot, so why would they?
Yeah, and I think that's with losing the players they lost this offseason. I think the last thing they wanted to do was have Scherzer out of that uniform as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully, you know, I think the one thing that I have some faith in is that the Astros scouting department does a pretty good job. You know, no one had really heard of Ryan Pressly when they made that move last year, and you might start seeing, hopefully not, but you might start seeing arguments for Ryan Pressly as the closer going forward.
And I don't think that's unwarranted. And maybe that makes somebody like Osuna available if you could find a deal partner for him. And I'm not advocating trading him. I think our bullpen is one of our strengths right now, at least that 7-8-9 or 8-9 combination that we have. But I think Lunau is going to have to get creative and get a little bit flexible. The other side of that is we very well could be in a position where we don't find a trade partner that works for us, and you're looking at the team we have. And you're going to win the division, and you're going to have to rely on your offense to advance, you know, in the playoffs. The good news is the offense appears to be coming around a little bit with Altuve and Springer joining the roster again. And then Carlos Correa in a couple of weeks hopefully solidifies that. We can stop playing Tyler White. We can play Miles Straw a little bit less, although he's been a able replacement at shortstop.
Can I just say I'm so proud of Miles Straw at shortstop because, you know, as I like to famously said, I was at his first game. I tweeted out that it was happening. And that one idiot in our little Astros group said it. He'd never see a second. It's like, I don't know, man. They don't just do this stuff on a whim. And he made that play when he threw home last night. That really changed the complexion of the game.
Well, and that's and that was a remarkably heads up play for a player who's I think started 22 games at shortstop, out of need. So it's not like he progressed through the system playing shortstop before this year. So I think there's things to work with. And the great thing about him, and I think barring some weird roster change, he's somebody who has a playoff roster spot because he's plus, plus, plus speed. He's plus, plus, plus defense in the outfield, and he's serviceable enough at shortstop that he fits a lot of needs for a team that relies on flexibility on the roster. So yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise this year.
So, as we wrap up, two Astros right now really knocking the cover off the ball, Yuli Gurriel and Yordan Alvarez, although like, as I pointed out, he only homered twice in the Rangers series. So I think, I don't know if we DFA him or what, but, do you see this as a sustaining thing or do you feel like, we're looking at the last, I know, cause Yuli's age, like Jessica did, my wife did not know he was 35. So,
well, and that's a Cuban 35, as we've talked about.
Like, could be 40.
You write your name in the sand and, you know, whatever you happen to remember 35 years later.
Right. But yeah, how do you think that this progresses the rest of the season as the Astros schedule gets very easy, quite frankly?
All apologies to Jess. I suggested on this podcast several weeks ago that Yuli might be somebody we look at trading because he is aging and performance to that point wasn't great. I don't think he's going to maintain the pace that he's on right now, but I think there's a lot to be said for fixing mechanical issues with your swing. And it's a silly little thing. And I think people who have not played baseball or not been around baseball don't understand. Cause I read a lot of online stuff. It's like, oh, I don't know why it's a big deal. They told him to keep his eye on the ball. Well, no, they didn't tell him to keep his eye on the ball. What Carlos Beltran told him was get both eyes on the ball, which is basically means open your stance. And over time you get in bad habits. And when you get in those bad habits, things kind of snowball. And he's made a very simple change to his approach at the plate, and it's resulted in his power coming back. So that part's maintainable, and I'd love to think that we're going to see more of the 2017 Yuli than the 2018 first half of 2019 Yuli. And I'm all for it because that makes our infield or the offense coming from first base, that solidifies that. And when you get Correa back and you can slide Yuli into a comfortable everyday first base position, that only benefits the team. Alvarez, I think everybody, at least me, and this is years and years of watching Astros prospects come up and not do well. Eric Anthony is my personal taboo in this area. All world, and that's who I grew up with, just waiting for him to break through, and I don't think he ever actually broke through. Daryl Ward was another one, a little bit older. But Alvarez hasn't stopped hitting. And the things that I love about Alvarez is that he takes walks. He doesn't swing out of his pants like some of the players on our roster who have been very successful tend to do. And he's willing to work counts. And he won't offer it horrible pitches. The league's going to make adjustments to him. I don't expect that he's going to continue to hit, 330? But maybe he does. Maybe he is everything that the Astros franchise has ever looked for from a left-handed hitter, somebody who bats 330 and has an OPS continually over 1,000. But even if he falls off a little bit, he's still a remarkable piece in the middle of this lineup, and he's only going to get better when you add somebody like Correa in to continue to stack protection on both sides of him. It is amazing, and it is rare in the major leagues for a player to come up, to progress the way he has, and be hitting cleanup as a rookie, as a 21, 22-year-old rookie on a world champion, a World Series contender. And that part, I think, gets glossed over because that's remarkable. the footballization of baseball will tell you all players should do that. They should all come up and be performing that well. The fact is, what he's doing is phenomenal and it's rare. And we should be really, really happy that we get to see it on our team.
Well, speaking of phenomenal and rare, that's what you are. And thanks a lot for being on Let's Get To, and we'll talk to you next week. And hopefully, you know, I hope we're talking about another, what, 7 or 9 game win streak. A little bit of a bummer that Trout might not play tonight. You hate to not see players out for injury. But I guess if you're Josh James and you're going to open, that's probably what you hope for.
I'm all Astros, so what I'm looking for is the offense to continue to play well. I'm looking for just a little word out. People have given up on Jose Altuve a little bit. He's batting .322 since he came back from his injury, batting .400 in the last week with an OPS over 1,000. So as Altuve goes, the Astros tend to go offensively. Those are good signs. And, you know, when you miss 30 games in the middle of the season, maybe you don't wear down in September and October.
That's what I'm thinking. All right, Andy, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview of the week, brought to you by Fine Line Sportswear.
And we are excited to welcome to the show the co-owner of the Chicago Dogs, Mr. Sean Hunter. Sean, thanks so much for being on the show.
It's my pleasure.
So I want to just kind of start from the beginning. First of all, we love indie baseball on this show. We've covered the Sugarland Skeeters, the Washington Wild Things, the Frontier League, and then we're going to be doing, you know, a focus on you guys and the Cleburne Rail Riders from your league. But I wanted to know, how did you get into baseball in the first place and then end up becoming a part owner of the Chicago Dogs?
Well, I've been in professional sports my entire career, which is now approaching 30 years. I got in right out of college. I started with the Minnesota Timberwolves when they were an expansion team and fell in love with the industry and live entertainment. And early on, I always had an admiration for minor league baseball. I felt the best ideas, the most irreverent fun, the affordability, the family angle, it was all rolled up into minor league baseball. And I always said, you know, someday I'm going to own a team. And I was very fortunate to get that opportunity in Rosemont here in the Chicagoland area. We launched our franchise in the summer of 2018. So this is our second year.
And I, you know, doing research for the show, I obviously knew about Chicago and its baseball heritage, but Chicago has to have the most teams per capita of any city in America. I mean, it seems there's at least, 4 or 5 right in the area.
You've got the two major league teams, the White Sox and the Cubs. You've got, I think, 5 or 6 minor league ball clubs within an hour to 75-minute drive time. So it's definitely the city of baseball.
So how do you, first of all, great name, great logo. How do you guys carve a niche for yourselves out in the Wild West that is Chicago baseball?
I think it starts with our stadium and our location. And I really want to give credit to the mayor of Rosemont and his vision. We built one of the nicest ballparks in the country. It was a $63 million project. So the facility is beautiful. It's got all the modern amenities of a big league ballpark. It just seats 6,000, and literally every seat is right on top of the action. The second being location, we're part of a vibrant entertainment district here in Rosemont. We're surrounded by movie theaters, restaurants, shopping. So there's a lot of complimentary things to do. And then the last thing is, you know, is really the show that we try to put on every night. We want to create what we call a fan appreciation day every day. So for all 50 home games, we want everyone to feel like it's fan appreciation day. And we know a lot of people are here every night for the first time. We know a lot of people are here seeing their very first professional baseball game. And so with that comes a lot of responsibility. And we think we're up for it. And we tell ourselves we're in the business of creating great moments of truth. And a moment of truth is a first and everlasting impression. So that's what we try to strive for.
I love that. You know, when we were prepping the show, when we decided this was going to be a thing that we would do, and it's basically ran by my brother and I, who grew up at the Astrodome, and a really good filmmaker friend of mine who's a big Cardinals fan, we knew we wanted the focus to be on minor league and independent league. And it's a wild, wild west again of like 200-something teams. there are things that disqualify you, not disqualify you, but make me more likely to want to put you on the show. We're only going to have 30 teams on this whole season. And so the South Bend Cubs doesn't interest me because it's the iconography of the Chicago Cubs. Y'all's like your logo, your name, everything grabbed us. It's everything that's good about minor league baseball right now. Can you talk a little bit about just how you came up with that identity and then the look that, that came from it?
You know, I've been lucky to be part of some great teams and great leagues, the NBA, the National Hockey League, Major League Soccer. And when you launch a team, you always want a name that will withstand time, you know, that maybe represents the region well. And I was very happy when I found out that hot dogs or Chicago dogs were not taken, because a Chicago dog means a lot to you know, the Chicago community, going back to the days of the Depression, where, you know, they called the Chicago dog a Depression sandwich. And so it kept a lot of people going in terms of food, and it kept a lot of people in business in terms of the hot dog vendors on the streets. But if you really boil it down, you know, the definition of summer, nothing is better than baseball and hot dogs.
Right.
I mean, there's probably not a more powerful combination in what we're doing. So the fact that we could call ourselves the Chicago Dogs, you know, be home in the city of baseball here in Chicago, and really kind of incorporate the colors and the stars of the flag of Chicago was just a great opportunity we couldn't pass up. So it's been received well. It's fun for me now in our second year to see our merchandise and our hats and our t-shirts pop up around town, or I fly a lot to see them pop up on an airplane. It's very exciting.
Well, I gotta tell you, I was so in love with it that not only did I buy myself a shirt, so I'm rocking it down here in Austin, Texas. My stepfather-in-law is a native of Chicago and got him one for his birthday, and he wears it all the time. And so it does make him feel connected back to this place he grew up. So I think you've definitely hit on that with your look.
That's great. Now we just have to get him out to a game.
I'm going to try to get him up there. That would be a lot of fun. You know, and I'm coming up July 10th. And first of all, thank you for getting me out of the Austin heat for a couple of days. But what can I expect, you know, from a game day atmosphere when I get up to Rosemont?
Well, you'll be joining us on a very special day. There's really about three big storylines. First, it's a doubleheader. Second, it's the only baseball game in town that day. So it's part of the MLB All-Star break. So neither the Sox or the Cubs are playing. So we are literally the only baseball game going on in Chicago, doubleheader. And then it's on top of that, it's Bark at the Ballpark. So yes, Fans can bring their dogs. And last year in our first ever Bark at the Ballpark, we came close to selling out, but we had over 400 dogs come out here. And it was just a great sight. It was a beautiful night. People had fun. We actually worked with Anti-Cruelty Society, so we had pet adoption as part of the night. It was magical. And so I think you're coming up on a perfect one, and I'll be surprised if that's not a standing room only crowd for the dogs that night.
Well, I'll make sure I lock my tickets in early. I'm going to bring a bunch of my cousins. So one of the things that I feel like has become the side mission of this is obviously the cultural side of what baseball means, like learning the thing about the hot dog and the Depression. But I want people to understand that it's good baseball that's being played. I think people have this idea that if it's minor league or if it's independent, that it's somehow like the XFL compared to the NFL. And I really feel like when you sit down, you cannot tell the difference between the action at a major league game versus an indie league game. But you guys do have two connections to Major League Baseball, both in your manager and in Carlos Zambrano. So I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about that just to show people how close that relationship really is.
No, that's a great point. It really is great baseball. We're the equivalent. We're independent. We're the equivalent of Double A if you were to compare us to affiliated ball. But you know, our skipper Butch Hobson had a great career with the Boston Red Sox, both as a player and then he managed the Red Sox for three seasons in the '90s. And he's been a successful manager in minor league baseball the last 18, 20 years. Won a couple of championships with a couple of different teams. Last season, our star pitcher, Taylor Grover, who had a 100-mile-an-hour fastball signed with the Cincinnati Reds. So our mission really is to be a pathway for these, you know, young talented players to make it to MLB. This year, we were fortunate that Carlos Zambrano, a very successful and very popular Cubs pitcher, decided to make a comeback and chose the Chicago Dogs to do it. He retired very early and has decided to come back at age 37. And thus far, he's pitched in a couple games and has done great. He's pitched 3 1/3 innings and has only given up one hit, no runs, and has a few strikeouts. So he's been very popular with the fans and has been a huge positive influence with our younger players. He's really been great. And it's helped kind of shine a bright light on what was a lot of good things going on already.
So one of the things that, there are a couple of things that I feel like that in my research of this, doing this show, the lifeblood of minor league baseball, and it's getting people to the park, which we talked a little bit about, but what are some of the other like fun promotions and giveaways you guys have coming up that maybe fans might want to hear about that might make it more enticing to come out?
We try to build equity in each of our nights. So we've got, one of our favorite nights is of course Saturday, one of the best nights of the week. That's our big fireworks show. And we made a commitment to put on what we think is the best postgame fireworks show in Chicago. Sundays are our family days where families and kids can get autographs of their favorite players before the game. We have bottomless popcorn and soft drinks on Sunday. Friday nights are our nights where we have our giveaway items and kids can run the bases. So we end up having, I think it's 9 Friday night games, and probably had one of the best giveaway nights in all of baseball ever when on opening night, as we like to say, we set a world record for the most people wearing a hot dog costume. We gave away a nice hot dog costume to 6,500 people. Wow. That came to opening night. So it was quite a sight to see, 6,000 plus people wearing a hot dog costume. It was a great visual. And Thursday night is our Thirsty Thursday with $2 beers. We also have fireworks then. And then probably one of my favorites, we took a page from all of minor league baseball, where a lot of teams will change the name of their team for one game each year and have some fun with it. We change the name of our team every Wednesday. We play as the Chicago Wieners. So we play in different uniforms. We play as the Chicago Wieners, and it's $2 hot dogs that night. And that's become one of our more popular event nights. So there's really kind of equity in each night, a little bit of different drawing power each night. But we want to make sure there's something for everybody across the week.
Kind of as we close it out, you've got a new baseball fan. First time they go to a ball game is at Rosemont to see the Chicago Dogs. What do you want them feeling as they walk out of the gate at the end of the night?
Well, we talk as a staff that there's really three questions that we want our fans to ask as they're leaving. Did I have a good time? Number one. Number two, will I come back? And number three, will I tell somebody about this? And, if we can successfully answer all three of those, we're moving in the right direction. So we work very hard at that fan appreciation experience. And, our mascots are awesome. We have a giant bottle of mustard. It's a big fuzzy character that kids love called Squeeze. And then we have the anti-hero, which is ketchup. And everybody knows that if you grew up in Chicago, you're not supposed to put ketchup on a Chicago dog. So we have the hero and the anti-hero. And they make it fun every night.
You might have just settled one of the big debates that's been running through this show. And we have been exponentially growing fans. And We opened up the show with the big debate, because down here in Texas, if it's you do hot dogs one of two ways, it's either chili and mustard or ketchup and mustard. And the ketchup on a hot dog thing has been hotly debated, and I think you might have just solved it for us.
Well, in Chicago, it's hashtag no ketchup. So we have a lot of fun with that. It's every once in a while we'll throw a social media post out there, just a picture of our ketchup mascot, just to get things stirred up.
Well, you definitely do a good job. And you know what? You're stirring up baseball in Chicago, and we love everything about it. And I can't wait to get out there in July.
Thanks for allowing us to talk about it. We can't wait to host you here in a month.
Well, Sean, thanks so much for being on Let's Get To.
Have a great week.
And now, on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
And we are going to wrap it up by talking about some of our favorite brands from the Eastern League. We're going to continue, as the season wraps up, our countdown of famous brand of our favorite brands in the minor leagues. Number five, the Trenton Thunder. It's a great logo design, y'all. I mean, it's a cloud with the lightning bolt as a bat. I really, really, really dig it. Number four, the aforementioned, the Akron Rubber Ducks. I got a t-shirt and a hat from these guys from my mother-in-law, and it's awesome. I wear it out, and it's kind of one of the most recognized brands in minor league baseball because I have worn it to Round Rock games. I have worn it to Midland games. I have worn it out to in and around Oklahoma, and people have been like, oh, look, Rubber Ducks. So if a branding's job is to be recognized nation and worldwide, the Rubber Ducks have done it. Number three on our list is the Erie Seawolves, and you might remember we had Erie on the show talking about their new branding, and again, it's fun. And one of the things I love about what Erie's done with their pirate look is that they really found ways to pivot that into other brand identities and other kind of special occasions and still keep the core of that brand. And I think that really shows flexibility. And again, one of the best things about what they're doing in Erie with the Seawolves. Now, number two, the Portland Sea Dogs. Again, that logo, super cute, the seal with the bat in his face. And I can't help but tie into the Portland Sea Dogs the identity of Slugger, their mascot. They do so much with Slugger on social media, with YouTube clips, things like that, that I can't help but share everything that comes through. They're hilarious. They're great. They just posted a new 80s video from one of their 80s weekends that's just amazing. So I highly recommend checking them out. And then number one, we really, really dig the Richmond Flying Squirrels. They really took that minor league kind of, goofy's the wrong word, but kind of just odd animal to be the front person or the front thing, I guess, of the front rodent or squirrels rodents. My zoologist out there, check it out. Let me know if squirrels are rodents. But they took that look and tied it into this Marvel type superhero craze, and I just dig it. Definitely check out those five. We'll have links to their Twitter pages. Give them a follow, give them a shout, and if you're in the area, go check them out. And so here's the thing I want to recommend to everybody, because again, we are sitting here in the middle of July. I'm a teacher professionally. I am back to school with in-service in about 3 weeks. I'm back in 3 weeks. I don't want to go back. Take some time to get out to a ball game now. Your life's going to get hectic. It's going to become harder to do that in August and September. There's, I think, very few better ways to spend a summer evening than eating a dog, watching a ball game, and having some fireworks. So again, get out, go see a team, support your local nine, and remember, let's get to it.